welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Reverend Dr. Karen Tate with her book, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World. Dr. Tate is the host of a radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and some of the material comes from that radio show in this book. And we are pleased to welcome her today to discuss the goddess and how it's set to change our world. Welcome, Karen. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Susan. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners.
So tell us a little bit about your story, about how you came to study the sacred feminine and how you were introduced to radio and as a means of communication, and then finally how you came to write the book.
Okay, well, all right. I think I probably started in an unusual way, quite frankly. I started out in New Orleans in the Bible Belt. I sort of call myself a recovering Catholic. I lived in New Orleans for most of my life. But while I was in New Orleans, it's when I first got introduced to radio. I was the public service director for a radio station called WSMB, which was on the penthouse of the Maison Blanche building. And I did that for a few years, and I really enjoyed that that atmosphere and that energy of radio, listening to talk show hosts during the day, and being a part of all of that. But then when I moved to California, I left that behind. My husband and I started a new life, and that was when I discovered the sacred feminine. And before discovering the sacred feminine, of course, as a Catholic, I knew about Mary, but I discovered that Mary was a very different type of role model or archetype for women than other versions of the sacred feminine. I discovered in California about the many different faces of God that are really around the world, and how many have been kept from us if we limit ourselves to Abrahamic or Judeo-Christian religions. And I just found that, it was just so provocative. And it tied in perfectly with my interest in ancient cultures and my desire to travel. And it actually started to give some of my travel focus. I started traveling to sacred sites of goddess all around the United States, around the world, and I could afford it back then, because I was a part-time travel agent, and we actually got to travel, say, to France for $300 round trip, if you can imagine that. I discovered the many faces of God across continents and cultures, and it was a slippery slope from there, because once you discover that, I think there's no turning back. Women become more empowered, and you start to connect the dots, really, between spirituality and politics, spirituality and how our culture is shaped. Then you become, I think, an activist for change, which I consider myself.
Well, that's true. You have gathered together a lot of really interesting voices in terms of this movement. This is really coming back to something, though, that had been found in most ancient societies, and you have to go way back, though, sometimes back further than recorded history, to understand that the sacred feminine was worshipped primarily in cultures all over the world. And I think that's what you're describing.
Well, yes and no, because, of course there were, we do have artifacts in museums around the world that show the feminine face of God was worshipped as long as 30 and 40,000 years ago. But currently today, if people get out of the United States and they look at other cultures, the Shinto in Japan, they revere Amaterasu, the sun goddess. You go to China and Eastern countries, you know, they have Kuan Yin. The Indians in India, I mean, you know, they have never given up their goddesses. I mean, they have, you know, they have a multitude of goddesses that are in their culture. The Native Americans, they have a feminine face of God. You go down to Mexico, they have Guadalupe. The Hawaiians have their own goddesses and their own traditions. I mean, you can really sort of, the Celts, you know, Saint mm-hmm. Bridget is also the goddess Bridget. I mean, you can really go on and on. But I understand, you know, having lived in that Christian bubble, that I think when you're here in the United States and you only, for the most part, meet Christians a lot of times, you don't always hear about this. You know, we tend to, I think, stick to our own little family, so to speak, and you don't hear about the Hindu goddesses or even the sacred feminine in, you know, Judaism, quite frankly. There's a sacred feminine in Mormonism, believe it or not. So she's there. You just have to know to look for her. And I thought it was important that people start to look for her. So that was one of the reasons I started my own radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, because I realized that it wasn't just important for people to know that there were feminine faces of God being revered all around the world. But when you look at the headlines today and you see how out of balance our world is, and when you know that the sacred feminine brings the answer, brings the solution to this world out of balance, then you think, well, you know, we need a platform to talk about this. And, you know, shows like yours and mine and, you know, other people out there who are trying to wake people up, you know, that's what we're out there trying to do, you know, educate people, because you're not going to hear this in mainstream media, although PBS often has some interesting things that touch on this. And, you know, you're certainly not going to hear it from the pulpit or the temple on Sunday, because, you know, they're invested in things staying exactly the same. And that's been a marginalization and a devaluation and exploitation of women.
So you probably were around during the feminist movement in the late 60s and 70s. Do you think there's been another movement that has occurred since then, or was that really the start of everything?
Well, I wasn't around then, unfortunately. You know, I wasn't there in the heyday. I'm sort of one of the, you know, torchbearers for the next generation.
Okay.
But I can answer your question, though. I believe that, you know, those women started us off, and they were a lot of the foremothers, and men, too, feminist men as well. I mean, because believe me, they're out there. You know, they all started this off, and we are just continuing it. And I think we've made an incredible amount of progress, because, you know, we've gone from, you know, this is out of the, you know, just the academic arena, you know, where people, you know, because academia knew about a feminine face of God, you know, but it didn't get out of that arena, you know, unless you were taking art history or women's studies, you know, you might not have learned about this, you know. But I think it has progressed, you know, and now you find people talking about the feminine face of God all around the world. And in, you know, from many different perspectives, and I think that it shows up in the new anthology that I have, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, because we have people in there that would probably surprise you, talking about the value of things that are sacred feminine ideals. I mean, I have Noam Chomsky in the book, Laura Flanders of Brit TV. There are atheists in the book. There are Jews in the book. There are progressive Christians, pagans. You know, all of these different folks are saying, yes, this is what the world needs. This is the new liberation theology.
There are two areas in medicine that I'm much involved in, and I believe I'm involved in it because of my I guess my dedication to the sacred feminine. One is the problem with breast implants. I don't know whether you were paying attention in the early 90s when a lot of things came out in the mainstream media saying that women were getting sick from breast implants. But basically that was kind of quelched in a bunch of studies that came quickly out of Harvard, Mayo, and Duke, all of which were flawed and completely, there was a panel at the NIH that said they were completely flawed and needed to be repeated. But in any case, they were manufactured in order to counter this claim that women were getting sick from breast implants. And then the FDA took implants off, silicone implants off the market for a good, I think from 91 or 92 to 2006 when they came back. And the implant manufacturers knew very well that if they only studied the implants for 5 years, there wouldn't be any problems, because the Dow Corning lipolysis information was that lipolysis occurred in the shell at about 10 years, and that's when the gel started to leak. So basically, one of the great travesties against women has been the breast implant problem, which continues today. These implants are out in the market. They're approved by the FDA, so that then you can't have class action lawsuits, according to a Supreme Court ruling. Women are having their lives devastated by them. There's a textured shell on the Allergan and McGann and Inamed, they're all the same company, that has been shown to be associated with an aggressive lymphoma that has not been pulled off the market because the FDA committee reviewing it didn't look at all the implants the woman had, just the last implant she had. Do you see the pattern here of being able to manipulate the science so that they never fix the problem?
I think this is a symptom of a bigger problem, and I do believe sort of ideals of the sacred feminine address that. I mean, we have corporations running the world, and mm-hmm. they get away with egregious things. Besides Big Pharma, we have Monsanto, we have the oil and gas industry poisoning
chemical.
The planet. Yeah, exactly. So the sacred feminine is really about the we and the us. And what that means is that it's not just about what's best for the biggest and the richest, or the people we call at the top of the dominator pyramid, the 1%. In fact, the sacred feminine is for, is for the we and the us. It's mm-hmm. for everyone. It's for the benefit of all of us, not just the privileged, not just the elite, not just the people who have the money to buy Congress and to buy laws and to buy the FDA. And and that's part of the balance that we're missing. When all you have to do is turn on television and see where, everything is tweaked. Our democracy is being taken away because of money, and it's corporations and rich CEOs that are buying everything. I mean, you look at some of the statistics, and depending on which ones you read, there's something like 300 people who have most of the wealth in the world. And, they're the ones who are calling the shots because, I mean, our democracy is set up because we have no campaign finance laws. They're set up so that, the people with the most money contribute to these politicians, and they have to spend more time raising money than they do creating laws. So what do? They write laws that are geared toward the people giving them money. And it's not me and you who are giving them vast sums of money, because we don't have vast sums of money. It's corporations. It's rich CEOs. And so this is where the politics of it comes in, because the sacred feminine, as I said, is for the we and the us, not the I and the me of the 1%, only caring about themselves, not caring about how they are affecting society. They've lost their integrity, because it's all about the dollar now. And that has to change. And I really do believe the social justice activism of the sacred feminine would bring this stuff back into balance, because we really have to get to a point where we're back in partnership, across the globe. I mean, it's not just in the United States. You know, these multinational corporations, are devastating people in other countries as well. But partnership is one of the key ideals of the sacred feminine. And, to bring it in context, so that's not just an abstract idea, we have to have partnership between corporations and consumers. And as I just said, it wouldn't be where they can get away with doing these unsafe practices or poisoning the earth, or, doing all of these things that they're doing, the big bankers, who brought down the economy. There's got to be a partnership where they have where there's accountability, where there's responsibility on their part. They just can't run amok. We have to have partnership between humanity and the planet so that we don't continue to frack and poison Mother Nature, who gives us everything we need to sustain ourselves. We need partnership between countries so that we don't continue to let the military-industrial complex get rich on war. We need partnership between corporations so that when two corporations sit down at the bargaining table, they each win. We need to create win-win situations like they have in game theory, instead of winners and losers. And you have people like, Mitt Romney, who come in and, take over a company and load it up with debt and sell it off, and everybody in the company's lost their jobs and their pensions. That's predator capitalism. That's not what we need in the world. We need partnership in our economy. We also need partnership among the genders, so that women don't continue to be the second-class gender across the planet, because that means women are getting paid less. That's institutionalized discrimination. And we see what happens to a woman in her work life. That can mean the difference of $400,000 in the course of her her earning years. I mean, I could go on and on here. We need partnership within ourselves, because we have to be able to balance our masculine and our feminine. Because you look at the archetype of Mary, Jesus's mother, she's a great archetype for just the feminine. She's nurturing, she's giving. But where's her fight? Where is that backbone to stand up and say no, to set healthy boundaries? Where's her sacred sexuality? That's all been stripped from her, because patriarchy doesn't allow the feminine to have that strength that we see in other goddesses like Sekhmet or Kali or the Morrigan. And so you see this whole idea of having lost the feminine face of God, and these attributes of the sacred feminine have, I think some of us believe you can connect the dots to all of these problems in the world, because we don't value the values of the sacred feminine out in our world. It's about greed, exploitation, domination, and, we're out of balance, and too many people are suffering because of it. We have more income disparity today than ever on the planet.
Yeah. I wanted to mention that Mary's mother, Jesus's grandmother, was actually from Ireland, and she was in an abusive relationship, and so she left her husband and went to a scene, community with Mary, and raised Mary apart, and then she waited until he died, and then she went back and claimed all his property in Ireland. And so there was a little bit of a feminist spirit in Mary's mother that is documented in Trish McCannon's book on Jesus. You may want to look at that.
I wonder actually if that goes back to the heritage left in Ireland by the Celts, because the Celts were pagan people. I don't think they were a patriarchal people. They revered goddesses. And so it would make sense to me that you know, women had more of a standing in that culture. But you know, once Christianity comes along and these Judeo-Christian religions that you know, make women subservient, then they really became no more than the property of the husband, and you know, they were a step above the slaves. And, you know, but in places like Egypt, we know women did have more rights. They could own their own companies. They could divorce their husbands. They could keep their assets. Also, Minoan Crete. We believe Minoan Crete was an egalitarian society. We have the archaeology to back that up. And so it's there in the history books. You know, it wasn't always the way it is. They would just like us to think so. You know, the myths have gotten distorted. You take the Demeter-Persephone myth, for instance, you know, where Persephone is abducted by Hades, taken down into the underworld. You know, some say, you know, the abduction included rape. Well, you know, the pre-patriarchal story of Demeter and Persephone, Hades isn't even in it. It's a story of Demeter and Persephone, mother and daughter, you know, and it's really a sort of a coming-of-age story. It's about Persephone, who realizes the people of the underworld have no one to look after them, and she feels that, you know, she should probably take that on as her responsibility. So she tells her mother, you know, mother, I have to go lead my own life, kind of a thing. And of course, you know, when she's away from her mother, Demeter is in sorrow, and that's when we have winter. But this whole idea of the rape and the assault, well, that's added to the story later in patriarchal times to sort of normalize the idea of power over, of assault, of rape, because you know, and the same thing happens to Hera. You know, Hera becomes this petulant wife chasing after her philandering husband. And really, you know, that just makes Hera a shadow of her former self. We see with the goddess Athena. Once the patriarchal myths come in and, you know, we have a male-dominated society, Athena is birthed from Zeus's head. Her mother has very little, if anything, to do in, with Athena's birth. So here you see men even taking over the role of life-giver, taking that even away from women. So, you know, we have to look back at these things and see that there really has been a gender war. And to a certain extent, I mean, it really goes on today because our mythology shapes our culture. And if we have a mythology that teaches us that rape is normal and, you know, men are in charge, well, that is the kind of society that we have. If we only see male gods, then we end up with male leadership. And, you know, that's why it's important that the sacred feminine be brought back into the psyches, into the stories, into the minds of people so that we get more of a gender balance. And then that also brings in more of a balance where we value the other attributes, you know, that the sacred feminine brings to the table.
So how are we doing in terms of progress? I remember my mother saying that the only choices available to her career-wise were, well, getting married and having children and just doing that, or becoming a teacher or a nurse. The women of today have a lot more choices than that.
Yeah, we have made progress. I think we are really living in the evolution, if you will. But it's I think it's two steps forward, one step back. My mother was similar to your mother, Susan. You know, she didn't have very many options open to her. And also in my mother's day, you know, she didn't have the benefit of having access to abortion either to control her reproductive health. And if a woman can't control her reproductive health, then she can't control, you know, can she keep her job? Can she have her education? Can she afford this other baby? You know, because sometimes it's not always up to her. You know, she could be raped. She could have a husband that won't use a condom. I mean, there's an assortment mm-hmm. of ways that a woman can get pregnant when she doesn't want to get pregnant.
She could take Cipro. There's a lot of Cipro babies out there. Cipro and does birth control.
Well, there you go. You know, and,
yeah,
and if
I mean,
you don't know that,
like that,
I didn't know that.
A lot of women don't know
you
that, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's why they have babies on Cipro. If they did, they would realize their pill isn't working.
But, you know, but here you still have men in Congress because, you know, Judeo-Christianity has infiltrated, you know, that separation of church and state. You know, you have across the country in red states where Republicans have gotten control of Congress, you have, a pushback on that. I mean, you have in some states, Republicans are even trying to prevent women from having access to contraception. I mean, there's all of this stuff in the Supreme Court with Hobby Lobby, and I mean, if people haven't been paying attention, they really should, because it's amazing to me that Republicans still get in office when they are against so many things that benefit women, that benefit the middle class, that benefit the poor. They're not for any of those things. Mm-hmm. They're only for the corporations. But to sort of, you know, get back to your question, are we making progress? I think we are, because you just look at what's happening in the headlines today. You have domestic violence front and center in all of these professional sports. They cannot keep sweeping it under the rug. You also have, let's just go over to another country, Saudi Arabia. In Saudi Arabia, women couldn't go out of the house without a male escort. In fact, that's where they have to even wear slippers because, men can't be bothered with hearing their footsteps. So they have to wear slippers. These women are getting sick and tired of this, you know. They are actually going out, getting in cars, driving, videotaping themselves and putting it up on YouTube and defying the male authority of the religious clerics in their countries. Here in the United States, we have other progress. You know, you look at the blue states. We have women who are in Congress. We have women, we have Hillary Clinton. We have Elizabeth Warren, women who hopefully are about to run for president. So I believe we are making progress, but it's in different little pockets where we need progress across the board. You know, we need to be able to raise the minimum wage. We need to be able to have equal pay for women. And anyone who is fighting against that is really fighting against the middle class, fighting against women. But I believe that, you know, there are men and women out there who understand what we're talking about here, and they really want to elevate everyone instead of continuing to perpetuate this idea of of women not needing equal pay, and we perpetuate the idea of equality. And I believe that's what's important. I mean, that's only the right thing to do. I mean, that would be justice.
Yeah, one of the biggest areas I see for improvement, just in what I'm looking at every day, a lot of people in my office and just my patients, so many women are raising children on their own, often without the benefit of child support. They can't seem to, even through the court system, get justice with child support. And so they're really in poverty, because they're raising children, trying to work jobs, didn't get education because they had children, early. And what I see is just for them, I think we need much better support for single mothers that are struggling.
Well, we do. I mean, you've really hit on something very important. 70% of women retire in poverty, mm-hmm. and that's a horrendous statistic. And we have this tendency in this patriarchal society of not naming the evils that men do. And that's sort of one of those things. You know, women don't have babies on their own. There was a man involved. So where did he go? You know, why is he not taking care of his responsibility? But also, you know, for instance, one of the ways we're making progress is we're finally talking about the assault of women in the military. We're talking about the assault of women on college campuses. But the media, I think, is part of the problem, the mainstream media, because instead of people who are writing the story or introducing the story saying, what's wrong with men in our society? Why do we have all this male violence? Mm-hmm. They say, oh, what's wrong with our culture? They have this tendency not to want to name the perpetrator or mm-hmm. name the person that is, you know, name that it's men who, you know, are walking away from children, name that it's men who are committing the assaults, name that it's men who 9 times out of 10 are the ones starting the wars. It's not women that are at the table deciding to go to war. It's men, because even though we're 50% of the population here in the United States, we have less than 20% representation of women in Congress. We have less than 20% of women in academia, you know, in the upper echelons of academia, in the upper echelons of corporate America, in the upper echelons of religious leadership. So women are more than 50%, but we are represented in these spheres of influence at less than 20%. So my mother said, you know, Karen, it's a man's world, and it still is. But I think more people are aware of it and realize it's a problem. And you go to Scandinavian countries, for instance, they have something called the 40% solution. Not only can women, not only do they have a better social safety net to begin with, where women, even if they have children, can afford to go to college and get higher education, but they also, once they graduate, corporations are required to have 40% of women in the upper echelons of corporate America. And if it takes this sort of regulation to get the ball rolling, then maybe that's what we need. Or in Iceland, what they did in Iceland was somehow they managed to get women to sort of just go on strike. And they made the point of, if women just stopped, if they said, no, I'm not going to take this anymore, you know, I'm being marginalized, I'm being discriminated against, see how you manage without me. Well, they had this huge strike, and that shifted things over there. Now they have, you know, they have actually more women in their government than they did before, and Iceland is doing very well. So, you know, there are solutions, but, you know, I think more American women really do have to step up and not fall victim to the disinformation out there. You know, and it's out there. You know, you have these ideas that, you know, feminism is a bad thing, when really feminism is just about justice and equality. And anybody who says differently, they've been misinformed.
That's true. When I was at a press conference in the early 90s with Barbara Boxer, we were countering, Dow Corning had hired a press company to kind of convince everybody that breast implants didn't cause any harm. So we were countering that with another press conference. And we, you know, we went on national TV and told our stories and everything. And at the end of it, Barbara Boxer put her arm around me and said, "My dear, you're very brave." And I had no idea what she was talking about until much later when the attacks started coming. But it was very interesting that somebody like Barbara Boxer has a real good understanding of what she's up against and what it takes to be a senator. You know, you can imagine the power struggles and everything at that level, and having to get reelected. You know, it's like no wonder so few women choose that life.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the system is sort of rigged in a way to benefit, you know, benefit men. And I think, and you look at our system, and it's a lot of old white men. You know, they're sort of the ones in charge. And, you know, they are the patriarchy. You know, patriarchy is rule of the fathers. And, you know, they're not going to go away quietly. You know, they're not going to go away just because they are perpetuating injustice. They benefit from the system, and they will do everything they can do to keep the status quo as it is. And yes, it's very difficult for women, but I think we're trying to make an environment where you know, where more people are aware that there has been, you know, this injustice, and we see statistics. You know, we see statistics that companies actually do better when they have women at the table because they bring a different perspective, you know. So that means governments also do better. The United Nations, I was interviewing Jean Shinoda Bowen. She works with the United Nations, and she was telling me about a little-known rule at the UN that big countries like the United States just ignore, but other countries are kind of forced to follow it, is what I gathered, is that when countries sit down at the negotiation table, or parties sit down at the negotiation table, they have to have women at the table, because women tend to find a way to negotiate. And collaboration, negotiation, those are also ideals of the sacred feminine. You know, war and domination is not always the first, you know, it shouldn't always be our first go-to solution.
You see that on the recent episodes of Homeland, where the female ambassador to Pakistan is negotiating, and then the male CIA head comes in and screws everything up that she's been trying to build. So it's even being presented on television now.
Well, you know, I think TV is actually doing a pretty good job of showing different role models for women, because, you know, that's a perfect example. You have this other show with Tia Leone that, well, it's on hiatus now, but it'll come back, Secretary of State. You know, you have The Good Wife. You know, you have more and more of these shows that show women in different roles. You know, they're not just the mother anymore. They're not just in the support role. They're not just the evil queen either, because that's something else patriarchy tends to do. You know, they'll take role models for women, and if they're powerful, they demonize them. You know, you can see it in history, like Adam's first wife, Lilith, for instance. You know, she wanted equality. She didn't want to submit. She decides she wants no part of this, and what happens? She's sort of ostracized, then demonized, and then, you know, Eve comes in, and then what happens? You know, Eve sort of you know, becomes the person that's blamed for all the evils in the world, and that's a whole nother story we could talk about. But you see in society where oftentimes, you know, you have the evil queen, and you know, so that sort of gives women the message that, well, if you're in power, you're going to be demonized, you're not going to be liked. And I mean, I know growing up in the South, you know, women are taught to be nice, don't make waves, don't be uppity, you want everyone to like you, to the point where you don't even set healthy boundaries, you know. You just sort of give and give and give until you can't give anymore. And, you know, that's not the way it's supposed to be either.
Yeah, and in spirituality, many different, I guess, paths in spirituality talk about the importance of balance. And one of those balances is male-female balance within each of us. And I know that, you know, really at the end of spirituality, you follow your own path. Each step of the way, you're internally guided as to which way to go. And without any concern about what others might think, or what, you know, the fears might be of the consequences. And I think ultimately, many of the very advanced people in our society, the Dalai Lama, You know, you look at someone like Michael Jackson, you look at many of the spiritual leaders have a very good balance of male and female within themselves. So I think also
I think we balance that. Yeah, I think that's true, Susan, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, so many of our religions rule by fear. You know, they're they're very fear-based. If you don't conform, if you don't fit into this narrow little box, then you're going to burn in hell or something like that. There's going to be some awful price to pay. And I think that's how they keep people in line. You know, that's how they've kept women in line, you know, to be in this subservient position, to submit to their husband, you know. I mean, I've interviewed women in the Quiverful movement, which is an evangelical Christian movement that has become pretty popular across the United States. And in this Quiverful movement, what I understand is, you know, men and women sort of make this agreement. You know, women agree to be subservient to their husbands, and as long as he takes care of them and takes care of the family, well, it doesn't always work that way. You know, a lot of times, you know, men who are attracted to this become, you know, they're these dominators, and, you know, it's far from a happy partnership. And also, you know, these women are told that their role in society is to produce children. I know in Kabbalah, I took some Kabbalah classes because they were very interesting. They're also told, women are told that they get more of the light, which is, you know, the grace of God, sort of, if they are you know, producing children. That's their role. Well, in the Quiverful movement, going back to the evangelicals, this woman told me that, you know, they are supposed to have as many children as they possibly can. I mean, you look at the, I think it's the Dugars or the Duggars on TV, you know, all of these children that this one poor woman has birthed from her loins. And they tell them, well, you know, if you get to the point where it's no longer healthy for you, if you die in childbirth, well, then you're a martyr to Christ. I mean, you know, I had to, you know, my hair went on fire when I heard that.
Who's going to raise the kids then, you know?
Well, you know what happens? What actually happens in those Quiverful families is the older daughter then is then tasked with helping the mother raise all the small children. So if the wife dies, well, you know, the older daughters just have to step up. And then they, in turn, are married into this Quiverful movement, and that's the life that they have to look forward to as well. You know, it's not a pretty thing. So if women think that this is only going on in some third world country someplace, No, it's not. Just look at dominionist Christianity, and you will see it right here in the United States.
I had no idea. I've never heard before today of that. That's interesting.
Yeah. Look up Quiverful movement, look up dominionist evangelical Christianity, and you see it. You know, it's right there. That's why you see these families that have so many children. And, you know, imagine being a woman that, you know, that's what God has told you you should do. And let's face it, if men in society are telling us what God wants, then how are we, you know, how are we supposed to have the wherewithal, you know, the mental capability to defy God if that's the bubble we're living in, you know?
Hopefully we'll walk into a bookstore, into the spirituality or religious studies section, and see that there's a lot more choices. You know,
hopefully. But you know, Susan, oftentimes what happens, I know I have evangelicals in my family. I have sent them my books and things like that. They think it's of the devil. So yeah, they really, you know, they... Yeah, so they won't read this kind of stuff because they think it's a sin.
Yeah.
So it's a catch 22. It's really a great way to sort of condition folks to be complicit in their own oppression.
Well, that brings us to the point in spirituality, which I think is one of the most important things to understand, is that, you know, we choose to continue to become victims. You know, we choose that the victim pathway. And so many people have never known anything but the victim pathway. And so everything that happens to them is because of somebody else. And, you know, they live in that helpless, hopeless space and usually die there as well, because cancer is much more common in that archetype. But you have to wake up at some point and realize that you're not a victim, that you have choices, that even if you're born into an oppressive family or an oppressive society, in a lot of cases, if you play your cards right and are smart about things, you can find a way out of that. And shows like yours that demonstrate this, there's help for women who want to get out of bad situations. And what I've found being a physician is that until the woman changes her victim mentality, she will continue to stay in that role. She may marry the same man 7 times, if you know what I mean, but she will continue to make those choices. And it's really up to the woman to understand that she is the one that says, no, I'm tired of being a victim. I can recreate this.
Yeah, and, you know, actually a great goddess archetype for women to get out of their victimhood is, believe it or not, the lion-headed Egyptian goddess Sekhmet. She has become a role model for women, because you look at, okay, she's a lioness. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, Athena, you know, her, or Artemis, I forget now, Artemis, you know, her symbol, her animal symbol is the bear. You know, you look at these, you look at these animal totems, for instance, and you look at the, attributes that, they carry with them. And Sekhmet, you know, it's about courage, it's about tenacity, it's about strength, it's about passion. And so if you can muster those things, that you can defeat that victim mentality. And that doesn't mean that you spend the rest of your life fighting either, you know, because you look at the mother lioness. She's a mother. She's a nurturer. She's playful with her lion cubs. But she's also capable. She's independent. You know, she's not reliant on, you know, someone else. She can stand up on her own 2 feet. And there's actually an interesting story that your listeners might find fun to hear. There's actually a Sekhmet temple in a small little city outside Las Vegas called Indian Springs. And the Sekhmet temple stands because a woman by the name of Genevieve Vaughn from Texas was having trouble getting pregnant. And she happened to go on a trip to Egypt, and she heard about the powers, if you will, of the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet. And this goddess was, she's a great healer. In fact, her son is the patron god of doctors. So she said a prayer to Sekhmet, and she said, Sekhmet, if you help me get pregnant, I will build you a temple. Well, lo and behold, it was not but a few months after she left Egypt, and she found she was pregnant. After not being able to conceive for years and years, she was pregnant with her first daughter. She ended up having 3 daughters, and she kept her promise. She built a temple to Sekhmet in Indian Springs, Nevada. It's a beautiful story.
That is. That really is. Yeah, Sekhmet is one of our favorite goddesses that we have learned about in our meditation group. And sometimes one of the people in the meditation group will educate the group about a certain god or goddess, and Sekhmet is very popular.
Yeah, and going back to sort of what we touched on before about how patriarchy demonizes powerful female role models for women, if you look up Sekhmet, you will find the patriarchal story about her, where she almost destroyed mankind. Well, when you read that, Don't be alarmed, because that's just the demonized, distorted view of Sekhmet, you know. Mm-hmm. They write her as if she's a mercenary of her father. But if your listeners go look her up and they stumble onto that, understand that that was just propaganda. You know, that was propaganda to keep people from understanding her true nature, to keep women from, you know, being afraid to emulate, the qualities of Sekhmet.
Right, right. Well, we're coming up on the last few minutes of the show. Would you like to give your contact information?
Oh, well, thank you, Susan. I would. And if I have a minute, I'd like to just briefly talk about a tour that I'm leading to Turkey, if that's okay.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you. Well, probably the best portal, so to speak, to find me is my website, which is my name, Karen Tate, KarenTate, just KarenTate.com. If you go there, you can find out about my books, all four of them. You can find out about my radio show that's been airing for 8 years, Voices of the Sacred Feminine. I was also in the documentary Femme, Women Healing the World. You can find out how to download that, because it's a really important documentary about women saving the world and women's values saving the world. And there's also a section there about the sacred tours that I lead. And in May, I'm co-leading a tour to sacred sites of goddesses in Turkey with Dr. James Rietveld, a good friend of mine. He's in the anthology that we've been talking about today, Voices of the Sacred Feminine. But he's also a religion scholar and an archaeologist. And the two of us together, we're going to be taking men and women, probably only 20, for 16 days in Turkey, and we're going to be discovering the sites of Isis, Demeter, Aphrodite, Mary, all the many different goddesses that were in Turkey, because Turkey was a crossroads. It was a real melting pot, you know, for a lot of cultures. So you had you had Hittites there, and Christians, and Jews, and Canaanites, and all of the different peoples were in that area. So there's lots of different sacred sites of goddess. So we'll be visiting archaeological sites and museums. We're going to do whirling dervish presentations and take Turkish baths and just do ritual at the sacred sites. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delightful interview. Appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Susan, and I hope folks will go out and look for my two books, if you don't mind me mentioning the titles again. One is Goddess Calling, Calling, and Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape the World.
Well, great. We've been interviewing Reverend Dr. Karen Tate on her book, Voices of the Sacred Feminine. Please join us next week. We'll be interviewing Sonia Grace on Become an Earth Angel, Advice and Wisdom for Finding Your Wings and Living in Service. And then Tom Palladino will be on talking about scalar energy on the 3rd of January. And please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.